Division One Golf with Master Peter Brusso.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen to the Golf Smarter podcast, which is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Check them out at birdgolf.com or click on their link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. That way I get credit. And remember, all listeners of the Golf Smarter podcast receive an exclusive 10% discount to the Bird Golf Academy. Our guest today is Peter Brusso, who is absolutely convinced that he can lower your scores and he doesn't have to see you swing a club. Or you won't have to change anything with your technique. Intriguing. The Vision One Golf Method gives you tools you can use on the course or the practice range that will increase your confidence, which in turn will lower your scores. Now, if you choose to listen to this podcast, then you've already bought into the Golf Smarter Method. So let's see what Peter has to say. Welcome, Peter.
Well, thanks, Fred, for having me on the show.
Well, I thank you for contacting me because this is the kind of thing that really intrigues me. Your Vision One Golf system, you have a 5-CD-ROM set that you sent along for me to listen to. And it's so interesting because when I started the Golf Smarter podcast, I had these feelings that you can really lower your scores through the mental part of the game. That, you know, your skills are one thing, but I can't teach skills. And I can't teach, your swing and your mechanics, but I can help people by talking to people like you who can calm people down and prevent people from being their own worst enemy out on the golf course.
Boy, are they ever. And we have to come clean with this. You know, I don't golf. Which is the irony of this whole thing.
Thank you for stating that right up front.
You know, I couldn't mechanic anything. And that's actually the double-edged sword because I am not a golfer. I approach the game of golf uniquely different than my constituents do, for example, or mechanicers. And I couldn't mechanic anything if I had to. That's almost not true. I mean, I'm an engineer, so I kind of figure it out, or try to anyway. But the fact that I can roll strokes off of people's games in 4 hours or less, or they don't pay me, is one of my mantras. It has to be with the mind. It's unequivocally with the mind. And if you go out and prove that, I mean, it's a demonstrable thing right then and there.
Give us a little bit about your background, because it's quite interesting.
Well, let me see. The best part of my background would normally be I've been in martial arts since I was 6 years old, and now I'm 53. That tells you something. But one of the big things about teaching martial arts is that it's a very severe environment to teach from, in the fact that somebody's trying to stand across the way from you and knock you out, choke you, do whatever, and you try to get people to learn in that environment. And I started this quest on how people learn because it was very clear that there were different learning styles, and narrowing that down on the mat over 20-some-odd years, I jumped out of engineering and decided to teach them a course on how to be successful at anything you choose in life, and I picked a Frisbee as a tool. Now, everybody knows Frisbees, and so I got the seminar going, hired a marketing company to do some marketing research with me, and we run some classes and some surveys and all that kind of good stuff, pretty standard stuff, and I had a golfer go through, and he said, "Wow, is this stuff applicable to the game of golf?" Well, I'd never golfed before, and I said, "Well, sure, it's applicable to anything." And so we went down onto the golf range, and I literally had never been on one, and I asked him, "Hey, show me what you do," and he did, and that kind of started this whole event, and I in-placed the technology in him right then and there, and it's a simple technology, mind you, and we'll go through that as you wish. But he had a phenomenal result, and it stuck with him. I mean, for days, he'd never played, or in this case, hit balls so well in his life. And how can this be? It's such an enigma. Here's a guy that's never golfed before, teaches me how to golf, and all of a sudden, I'm hitting better than I ever have in my life, and you can't blame it on mechanics because I don't know any, right? So it's just got to be pure mental, how they approach it. And from that standpoint, I got introduced to A.J. Bonner, He was at that time the golf a dean of a golf school. Didn't even know they had such things. We met and placed the technology on a range. He was extremely intrigued with it. We went out on the course, which is really where the payoff is. And at the end of the day, he says, you know, what you got here is the art of playing golf. That's what you've got. You've East meets West. Finally, somebody got it. And again, I couldn't appreciate what he had to say about all that because I'm not a golfer. And that's how this thing got started. Then I went out on the tour, and I worked with tour players. And then I said, well, it should work anywhere. So we went on this kind of quest to go from, the 100-plus type scores all the way to the tour players and see if the technology fell apart anywhere. And in that adventure, worked with three tour players and one long ball champ, and I worked with about, as I kind of calculated, about 1,600 golfers in the sake of a couple of 3 years. Then I got sidetracked, put it on hold, and came out of retirement here just recently, having spent 10 days or so in Hawaii watching people golf, and I said, they're doing the same thing they did 16 years ago. Nobody's corrected this. So I made a mental note to come out of the retirement and get this program underway, and that's kind of the Reader's Digest version.
No, that was an encyclopedia. That was
well, I could have elaborated, mind you, but I could have elaborated.
But that's okay. We've got the time to do that. So are you doing golf exclusively now?
No, I'm still I still do engineering, and I still do marketing, and I've been focused on encapsulating the program so that it's a digital download and pushing it from a digital standpoint as opposed to going out golfing a lot. With that being said, however, I am teaching certain people and introducing them to the technology on the range and getting to gather some more testimonials that are current as opposed to old. Some of the teaching pros, one of the closest ones is Wayne Serrell. He's actually going to do the front end of a real book for me, a chapter. He loves the stuff and teaches down here at one of the exclusive resorts in San Diego. But I'm out there on the course with the guys, and not much has changed, quite frankly. I mean, I see new types of clubs, and I see new other things, but not a lot else has changed.
No, not at all. Let's just say Vision One Golf, VISION1GOLF.com is your website. And if people want more, once they're intrigued by this, you can go look at that. But let's get past that now. Right. We've sold enough on that. I think of the old TV show Kung Fu, and you talk about martial arts, and really that's a philosophical, a mental thing, as well as, oh yeah, there's cool fighting, you know, to watch on TV, but they really emphasize the philosophical side of that. Martial arts brings that out, right?
Some arts do. I mean, a lot of arts, have been commercialized to the point of you can't recognize them, they're a sport, but I'm a subject matter expert for the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. They have their own program, and I help teach that. But more importantly, I've taught them how people teach, and I've shot literally all the training videos for the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. So understanding the philosophy, the mind-body-spirit aspect of it is really what the key of a practiced art is really all about. And the art that I practice is ninjutsu, which is about a 1,500 to 2,000-year-old art from Japan. And it's all about the mind. Yeah, you learn a lot of the body stuff. You learn a lot of techniques. But after a while, how many techniques do you need to kill somebody, so to speak, you know? And then it's a matter of application. And it's a matter of getting in your opponent's mind and calming yourself down and the oneness aspect of that. And literally, it boils down to focus. What are you focused on? And how do you peak yourself up for the performance event? And so taking those things from the martial arts into golf, I'll throw out some easy ones here, but for example, and I'm going to make some kind of brass statements that a lot of golfers may want to try to take out their clubs and chase me around the golf course with, which actually could be a lot of fun.
I think based on what you just talked about the Marine Corps, nobody's going to...
if they start chasing you,
my guess is if they start chasing you, you're not going to run.
I don't run.
No.
I advance. Yeah. I advance onto the beach. Thank you.
Yeah, right.
But the big thing that Vision One Golf has really produced, and I'm an engineer, as you recall, is a process. You have a pre-shot process and a post-shot process. And it's very, you can turn it on and you can turn it off. It's really kind of cool. It's not hypnosis or anything else. And for example, let me throw out a question. You've seen, and maybe it's even happened to you, you've been up on a tee or somebody you know has been up on a tee where there's a water hazard up in front of you, right? And you know you have the skill to get over the water hazard, but somehow or another you alter a perfectly good good swing and you move the ball into the water hazard. You ever had that experience?
Oh, I've even talked about that numerous times on the course where I've played with somebody and they're quite familiar with that course to their detriment, where they would say, oh, boy, this hole, I hit it in the water here every single time. And one of the things we've discussed many times is that is history. You can't predict the future, so why do you do that to yourself?
Right. Well, and I'll add some other things to that. See, your mind is an incredible item. It can't tell right from wrong. It doesn't tell do's from don'ts. The only way it can tell what you really want to do, what you want to have happen as an outcome, is by what you're focusing on at that moment. And it will raise or lower all of your skill sets and your capabilities to match what your view is at that moment. That's one of the key secrets of Vision One Golf. And so when you stand up there on the water hazard or up on the tee, and you say, don't hit it in water, don't hit it in water, your brain doesn't hear do's or don'ts. All it hears is the water, and it's emotional. And it assumes that that's exactly what you want because that's your focus. Now, had you focused on, 100 yards past that and a certain flight, guess what? The water doesn't exist anymore. Your brain says, oh, it wants that other focus. Okay, I'm gonna make that happen for him.
Well, we should just pick a spot name for it, shouldn't we?
Well, in Vision One Golf, there's several steps. The first thing, and this is kind of funny too, because if I put a gun in your hands, there's a way to hold it, there's a way of pointing it, and you got to shoot it, and you're going to hit a target. I can't tell you how many golfers will stand up on a tee and hit it downrange, and I'll ask them, what did you want to do? Well, I just wanted to move it down the fairway. Well, you got that, but it's way off to the right. There was no target. They actually had no target. And so in Vision One Golf, we connect the swing, the strike of the ball, the flight, and the target together in a visualization, in a focused visualization before you hit the ball. And then when you come out of that, you just pull the trigger.
Okay, so, give me that one more time. The swing.
Okay. You're going to see, well, let me back up, okay? Let me back up a little bit, even before the swing part. I got ahead of myself here.
Okay.
If you had to fight me, and you knew who I was, on a scale of 0 to 10, what energy level do you think you should be at to fight me?
That I should be or that I will be?
That you need to be.
15.
Exactly. Okay. So one of the ways, a very clever way of putting you, to peak you up into the event, to get you in a powerful mode, because if you can move a golfer into a powerful mode, they can access and decide what the strategy is for this particular shot. Because remember, I can't tell them what that strategy is. I have to empower them to do that. So one of the things we have them put on a Superman cape or a Darth Vader cape in their mind, literally. And when you put a cape on, you suddenly stand up straight. And it's kind of a stupid thing to do in a way, but you put a Darth Vader cape on, you start walking around a little bit, and all of a sudden you start feeling extremely powerful.
I can even envision throwing my chest out.
Exactly. And you stand up there and you look at that shot, you know you're going to make it. We don't have any issues with confidence anymore, because that was a mind blower for me. I didn't understand that golfers weren't confident with their shot. I mean, we keep hearing that all the time, and that just doesn't compute to me at all. And you get in a
you
dark
really
Vader
don't,
cape.
You really don't play golf, do you?
No, I don't. But on the flip side, I mean, I can come up against people with bayonets and guns and everything else, and there isn't any. There's nothing in my head that doesn't say that I'm not going to succeed in taking that away or terminating that opponent. I don't think like that. And the reason I don't think like that is these visualizations of I'm empowering. I empower myself. And that exudes out there. And it just doesn't happen. So at any rate, we get them into this powerful state. And now I have them place their favorite tour player or themselves in this visualization, standing by where the ball is at, seeing the swing, the strike, the flight, the target, the swing, the strike, the flight, the target. They get in their mind from kind of a remote view exactly what they want. So what are they doing, Fred? They're getting their focus, right? They're actually creating their space in their mind. They're just about ready to move into it to make it reality, right?
Yep.
Now they go forward, they address the ball. We let them do all their comfort moves. I call them comfort moves. Their wiggles and the waggles and all the other stuff they do. I actually have them close their eyes. And I, in their mind's eye, I have them see the swing, the strike, the flight, the target. Yeah, I'm excited by that. Get excited by it. As soon as you see what you want, get excited by it. Get emotional without moving. And you still got your eyes closed. And then you open your eyes and you just pull the trigger. And the most phenomenal shots come out of these people.
So we should be doing this visualization as we're ready to strike the ball. Not we've already addressed the ball. We're standing there. Close your eyes and go for there.
Yep. There's two of those places. One is behind it. When you put your cape on, you get all powerful up, see what you want. That's
okay.
One place.
Okay.
Second one is you move directly forward. You get up over that ball. You do your comfort moves because I can't get that out of you guys. The comfort moves really don't – I don't think they have much to do with the game at all, but that's my own opinion. And it just makes you feel like you're ready for the shot.
Well, we've discussed that numerous times, and it's all about pre-shot routine and just getting into a rhythm and trying
exactly.
to do the same thing over and over the same way.
Right. And in their mind, at that point, in their mind, we get the swing, the strike, the flight, the target. The swing, the strike, the flight, the target. It's just what you can get them to see that. Or if they're kinesthetic learners, you get them to feel that, okay? And then they're all pumped up. They're ready to make that shot. And in the swing, you can get the smoothness, all the mechanic things you guys are worried about, you know, that I couldn't tell you anything about. You get all of those mechanics that your teachers taught you right in your visualization, your swing, the strike of that ball, the flight, and the target. Get all those four things connected, open your eyes, pull the trigger, and boom. Phenomenal result.
I would just ask one thing. Should it be target, swing, strike, flight, target?
It might be. I kind of get them, you know, with a swing. I kind of take them step 1, 2, 3, 4 as the event goes out. But, you know, I can play with that. That might not be a bad thing. So
it screws your rhythm up, I understand. But I would envision that to get those things, I want to have a target in my mind before I start my swing, my strike, and my flight.
That's correct. And that's what you do back with a cape on.
Right, because by putting target at the end, that's already past what you've done. I mean, you've got to have a target in your mind to get started, don't you?
Yeah, well, it's step one. When you put the little favorite tour player in there and you kind of step back and you see him swinging, you see him strike, the flight, the target, you're getting all that kind of data, I think, in step number one.
Okay.
And so you know what you want to do when you get there. When you address the ball and you go through comfort wiggles and waggles, I don't want you focused on wiggles and waggles anymore. I want to get you back into what you really want to have, and that's why I get you back in the swing, strike, flight, target type thing.
It's all about results.
Absolutely, and I've had some phenomenal results. And it's not me. I mean, it's you guys. In martial arts, I have to point the path. You guys have to walk it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they get some phenomenal results, and they think, wow, how'd that happen? That's a fluke. Uh-uh. There's a process there, and it's very rhythmic and repeatable. I took one of the guys here as a sample. I gave him the audio downloads, right? I said, I don't want to talk to you. You just go do this. I wanted to see if somebody could do it from a digital download. He rolled 10 strokes off his game the first weekend. He came back so pumped up. He's actually on the Vision One site as one of the testimonials. He was so pumped up. And he's tried everything.
Yeah, but what did he do the following weekend after that?
He hasn't stopped, and it's been 5 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
It has not stopped.
You just never know with golf. Being good 2 weeks in a row is not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, no, he has not stopped.
Great.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I think most of the people that have tried this, and like I say, out of the 1,600 that I've recorded, that I think I've recorded anyway, and my mantra in those days were, you know, you pay me $50 is all I was charging for kind of a big seminar thing. You know, in 4 hours or less, I'm going to roll 10 strokes off your game or you don't pay me, period. And out of that, I never had a person give me money back. I gave one guy's money back. He just couldn't get it, and he didn't ask for his money back, but I just couldn't do it. You know, my whole thing is, if I can't help, then don't pay me.
And what does that mean, he didn't get it? Flush that out for me.
Well, as I recall, he just could not get any result. He couldn't visualize. He couldn't internalize. He couldn't get the principle at all.
And don't you find that as a greater challenge?
Well, one out of 1,600, I'll take the other 1,599 to the bank, thanks. I'm not going to focus on the 1%, you know. But the answer is yes. But, again, as you pointed out, was he having a bad day? You know, had he been drinking before? I don't know. You know, would love to work with him again, as a matter of fact. Offered to, you know. But typically, if they don't...
For 50 bucks, you should pay him.
I probably would pay him, actually, today. I'd do that today. I really would.
Well, if he's listening, he should call in.
Absolutely. He'll get his free. He was at Rancho Marietta, by the way. Marietta Hot Springs, that's where he was. So, anyway, that's been kind of the results. And then and those are long, those are drivers and stuff, you know, type of things. But we had some phenomenal stuff in putting.
I was going to ask you next. Let's do some more. Give me some more takeaways. Give me some more things that I can use, that we can all use. And let's go ahead, now that we've hit the ball far, now let's get to the hard part of the game, hitting the ball that isn't far, but rolling it.
Well, the one of the results that I was, remember now, because I'm not a golfer, I watch what they do and I try to analyze it from a performance standpoint, is this good, bad, or ugly. The standard thing on a 30-foot putt, if you ask a person what's the object of a 30-foot putt, chances are they're going to tell you, more often than not, is to get it close to the hole so the second time it'll go in. That sound reasonable?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that's wrong, okay? The reason why that's wrong is the object of a 30-foot putt is to put it in the cup. And if you miss the cup, you're close enough on the second one anyway. So if you think about it, our performance has been led by somebody, I don't know who that is yet, to be like a rubber yardstick. If you're just trying to get it close to the hole, and that's your focus, do you ever think you're going to get it in the cup? It's a arbitrary event. However, turn the other way around. If your object of a 30-foot putt is to put it in the cup the first time, what do you think your odds are putting it in the cup versus just getting close?
I don't think they would change.
I think they would, and I have actually proven that, in fact, they do. Because if you just want to hit it close, it might actually intercept the cup and fall in, and you get your 30-foot putt, right?
Yeah.
But if your whole intent is to get it in the cup the first time, your body's going to peak up. It's going to try to do exactly that. And there's going to be a percentage of time you're going to get it in the cup, and there's going to be a percentage of time you're going to get close. But if the other way around is just get it close, it's an arbitrary thing if you happen to get it in the cup. So from a performance standpoint, the yardsticks are screwed up.
Yeah, but Peter, I've been a proponent for a long time of, if you don't have any expectations, you won't be disappointed. And bringing that into golf, too, helps you, I would think, helps a golfer not get really frustrated, and that's the thing that can bring you down more than anything, is if you don't have the expectations and you're realistic about what you can accomplish. Am I going in the wrong direction for you here?
Well, it's counter to what I say, but that's fine if you want to. I'm sure the golfers don't go out there without some expectation. You know, they want to not three putt. They want to have a score of a certain amount. There is an expectation there.
Right, and what happens if they don't meet those expectations? They have a miserable day.
Well, I don't know. It's all cool, but I'm just saying for that particular shot, you should have a goal in mind. In each shot, you should have a goal in mind, in the way that I think. To have no goal in mind or no expectation of the shot is going to, I think, open a randomness that your scores will go higher. You're really not focused on what you want. And that's what I'm trying to bring out here.
Your scores go lower, as the case may be.
Yes, exactly. Excuse me.
You really don't play golf, do you?
I don't. No, I tell you, I don't do
What are
this.
You doing here?
Well... It's a phenomenal event that has occurred. This stuff is incredible. It really works well. And at any rate, so when I'm looking at people, how they train, because that's what we do in martial arts, is how you train, how you fight is how you train. You train like you fight, or you fight like you train. And the same thing is true in golf. If you train wrong, then you're going to play wrong.
Okay.
And like up on the driving range, I see guys go up there and they'll hit a 5-iron, a bucket of balls with a 5-iron, maybe something else. And then they always say, boy, if I could just, you know, play golf like I hit up here on the driving range, I'd be on the tour. Well, the driving range is really not connected to golf, believe it or not. those skills and those patterns that as humans, as predators, we're learning up there have almost no applicability out on the course. You don't start with a 5-iron and stay with a 5-iron. You don't hit a full bucket of balls with a single club. No, you hit it with a driver, then you hit it with an iron, then you might hit it with a wedge, and then you're going to putt onto the green. And
so what are you suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is you fight like you train. So you drive the way you train, other than there are some reasons to go up there and try to isolate some swings. Don't get me wrong with that. But if you're trying to train to play, then you get up on the driving range and you pick out a target. So it's 400 yards out. And with range balls on, now they have limiting range balls and a bunch of stuff like that. So I understand that stuff. But you drive out to that point and say you're 150 yards short. Then you pick a spot and come back. You put your club away. You pick up your 5-iron. You walk around for a second. You put up a ball. You get into our process. You pick a spot that's 150 yards out there like a flag or a sign, and you hit out the it. Say you fall 20 yards short of that. Then you grab a ball, and you go over on the putting range, and you drop it 20 feet from the cup, and you putt that ball in, and then you walk back, and you tee up for driver again. That's training for the game of golf.
Okay. I can see a bucket of balls taking 4 hours. That would be...
Look at the money I'm saving you, though. Just look at the money I'm saving you. And we're training for a process that really has... Your body is conditioned, you know? Your body gets into that groove. Remember all your wiggles and waggles and all that comfort food moves to stuff, you know? And so you've got to fight like you train. And so that's one of the cases where, in fact, not all the ranges are configured that way, so it is sometimes difficult to find a place to train like that. There's a whole bunch down in San Diego like that, but so you can't always do that. But you can certainly, from the driving standpoint, drive, iron, chip, kind of routine, and then use your putting back over on the putting green. I'm routinely out there, and I watch guys with putting, and they three-putt. They use three balls. Three putt, three balls. See any conditioning in there? First putt tells you the speed. The second one tells you the lie. The third one goes in. You think you're putting pretty well. So when you get out on the course, you only have one ball. But in your mind, the way you set things up, is I have to hit the three times to get it in the cup. So you end up three putting quite often. So one of the quick things to do about putting is only use one ball.
Nah, I don't know if I buy that.
I understand that, but it's... It's a pretty phenomenal thing when you only have one ball out there. And under those conditions are the same conditions you should be training with back on the putting green, unless, of course, you're doing something mechanical or whatever. But that's the condition, those are the pressures, and that's what you should train with. And we do some other things with putting. We actually paint in our visualization. We have the same pre-shot routine on the putting green. And we actually paint in our mind one of two colors, white lines or yellow lines. Now, I can't teach you how to read a green, but I can teach you how to get it on the line, whatever line that is you choose. You paint the line on the green in your mind, I can help you get it on that line.
How?
In your visualization, remember we do the swing, the strike, the flight, and the target, you know,
right.
Up on, okay, well, in this case, it's swing, putt, line, cup, okay?
Okay.
Those four things connected. Well, the line is this yellow line or white line. And in your mind, you draw this white line on the ground, and there's a long story of how the colors came into be. Colors seem to focus your mind like it supercharges it. When you see colors on things, it supercharges the mind's focus. And so it says, okay, I've got this ball, I've got this club, I want to get it on that line. Now, assuming you can connect the dots, the line to the cup, you guys can... That's green reading. I don't do that. And it gets it on there. And it's phenomenal. And so we have some incredible skill sets on these putting clinics that I do. And people walk away with a whole new respect for how you putt. And it's just the addition of we have this focus, we have this colored line in our minds, and we put the ball on it each and every time.
I know I'll say a few times, but I know like every couple rounds – I'll hit one or two long putts.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how I'll see the putt go in. I mean, I'll be lining up the ball.
You never miss.
And I could just see the line where it's supposed to roll, and I nail it. And I just, when it goes in, I'm not surprised. And I always try to figure out, how do I recreate that? What did I do right that time? And how can I recreate that?
Well, you're actually doing the process. You're seeing the line on the green. And that supercharges your mind to put that ball on that line. Now, you set that up as a pre-shot routine each and every time. What do you think's going to happen?
Hopefully, I'll make a couple.
Absolutely. Hopefully, you'll make a lot. You know.
Hopefully, I'll make a lot, yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Let's not limit ourselves now. Whatever you think, whatever you say to yourself in your mind, you're absolutely right. So we got to get the limiting factors out. You're going to make them each and every time, period. End of sentence. And if you don't, this game of golf is fun. We can handle that. The other thing that with that same golf routine, you say you'd like to be able to recall those good shots. We teach people about anchors. I don't know if you ever heard about anchors, but anchors are something we do all the time as humans. If you hear a piece of music, you might remember a romantic place that piece of music got connected to.
I think smells would really be anchors, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Bacon and eggs cooking, who do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Mom, you know? And so those are a primitive thing. When we were hunters-gatherers and we, you know, were out and about, and all of a sudden we smell a saber-toothed tiger, you know, it hits us, oh, my God, saber-toothed tiger, you know? And we get connected, danger, symbols. We do the same thing in performance. So if you hit a good shot, your biochemistry can be recalled at that point. So what we do is have you touch yourself a particular way. You touch your chest, tap it twice. It has to be some physical response or some physical connection to the biological, your biochemistry, that will recall that performance. It's a pretty standard thing they call anchors. And so in our Vision One golf program, we teach you how to anchor yourself to good shots. So there, when you get up to do the shot and you realize it's that kind of a shot, you touch yourself in that particular way, fires off your biochemistry, and boom, you're right back there again. That's how we learn.
Just make sure you touch yourself where you can do that in public.
Exactly. And I know there's a lot of jokes about that one, you know, but
I tried to make a bad one.
No, that's we get this all the time. Yeah, but the touches have to be unique enough that, in fact, or physical stimuli.
Don't go there.
They have to be unique enough. So, like, one of the guys that touches thigh, touches chest, you know, for particular things. One of the tour players we got going with this. And you can see him. I mean, if you know what you're looking for, you can see him fire an anchor off before he takes a shot. And I was a little surprised, to be quite honest with you, I was a little surprised at how the anchors had played into the performance area, where I'm kind of an engineer, I'm kind of hooked in the process of the visualization on the focusing. A lot of the golfers, man, they gravitate to these anchors more than not. I'm really surprised at it, quite frankly. And they have a great result with it, so who cares? You know, let the performance speak for itself.
Yeah, well, let me get this straight. I want to straighten this out before mm-hmm. we wrap this up. On the anchors, after you've had success, you touch yourself and then try to bring that back?
Well, you're already in that state, okay? You're already in that physical biochemical
state. When is it that you're doing the touch that you use to bring back the anchor?
Well, first you have to develop the anchor for the particular shot.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Once you have this kind of categorized set of anchors that you do, then you can apply them out on the course when you want to recall that biochemistry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have that piece of music that you play and you remember that romantic time, and if you want to get in that romantic time and you're not there, go play the music, right, and you listen to it, and then boom, you're right back there, okay? That exterior stimuli, being the music, recalled your biochemistry, okay? They're linked physically.
Interesting.
In the e-book that I have, and also one of the discs, I talk about, and you'll laugh at this, but it's good stuff, guy comes home from work. I don't want to be sexist here, but guy comes home from work. The wife has been there with the kids all day, and they've been driving her crazy, right? She's trying to cook the evening meal. He comes in. The evening meal's burning. Little Johnny's doing something, and she yells, you know, get little Johnny. He's been driving me crazy, you know, so you go get little Johnny. But she looks in your face, right? This goes in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out. She's in a bad mood, and she looks at your face, right? Now they decide they're going to get a divorce, their marriage isn't working, they go to a counselor, and what does the woman say? I don't know what it is about him, but as soon as I look at him, I don't feel good. I'm angry. As soon as I look at him, I get angry. But she's actually anchored her anger and frustration that she was feeling with that exterior stimuli being your face. It's a realistic thing. And that's a classic example of how anchors are used, and we form them, and we don't even know we form them on a day-to-day basis.
Very interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Now, here's the black side of the art.
Uh-oh.
So if you're out there with your buddies, you can anchor them in the poor performance. When they have a bad shot, you touch them in a unique way, pat them on the back. God, really sorry that happened to you, right? You start setting up that, and then when you want to make sure they shoot poorly, you go over before they make the shot, and you touch them that particular way and wish them luck.
Oh, you're bad.
Oh, I know.
They're going to ask for a divorce then, right?
Absolutely.
Very good. Peter Brusso of VisionOneGolf.com. Really interesting stuff. And even for golfers, from somebody who doesn't play golf, you can make it apply, and it really works. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate this.
By the way, the product that you have, the T-Tour, love the product. Falls right into what we do because, as I think I mentioned to you before, when we're out on the golf course and I see these guys and they don't know what's up ahead, so they really can't visualize well, they really can't strategize, and I go, don't you guys have some tool for this? I'm like, do some recon, you know? And when I saw your product, I go, duh, somebody's got this right. So it's a great product. It's not a shameless plug by any ways. It really falls into the visualization stuff that I'm asking our guys to do that they really don't have the tools to understand what's up ahead.
Thank you. That was very nice of you. I did not ask you to do that, and
nope,
I would
nope.
not have asked that, but I appreciate it very much.
But everybody, I think, can see how that falls into my game plan. It'll make my guys much better, I think.
Yeah. Well, good. I think the information you provided us is going to make everybody a little bit better, and that's all we want on any given day, just to be a little bit better than we were yesterday.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for having me on.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, sales manager at EdwinWattsGolf.com, would like to help. And if we use your question on the podcast, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, send an email to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com with the subject Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hey, you like the timing on that, Kenny?
That was good. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, it was pretty good. So we got a couple questions for you. Actually, I want to give away hats, okay? So I got a lot of questions.
Well, good.
Good. The first one comes from Clarence Rudy in Flossmoor, Illinois. And he says, if I walk a course, is it easier for a two-wheeled cart to be pulled or for a three-wheel cart to be pushed? Basically, what's the advantage of a three-wheel cart? Now, the reason I'm asking this first is because I want to know this as well.
It's a good question. I mean, it really is. The way that we look at it and the way technology's changing carts for people that like to walk, anytime you pull a cart, obviously you're in a contorted position. Your arm's behind you. You're not facing forward for the most part. You're having to turn your head, and you're pulling on a cart that has a bag on it that weighs anywhere from 25 to 35 pounds. And you do that for 18 holes over,
it's like 4 miles, right?
Yeah, it's going to wear on you, and obviously your game's going to suffer.
Yep.
And what they found out is to have a cart directly in front of you pushing, you're using less of energy, one, and two, it's easier to get the thing around the golf course. Me personally, I mean, I would push a cart before I'd pull one, every single time I play.
Yeah. Now that we've played together, I can honestly say to you that being the age of your grandfather, for me, carrying a bag for 18 holes, especially in Northern California where it's not necessarily a flat golf course, it wears on my back and I do get fatigued at the end. So I've tried the two-wheel pull carts in the past and I found that by the end my shoulder is really hurting me. So I'm curious about, really intrigued.
Sure.
About getting the three-wheel push cart.
Not just your shoulder, your back as well. You're twisting to be able to pull that cart. So if you have
especially
lower back
uphill.
Problems, yeah. If you have lower back problems, obviously it's gonna make a difference in a round of golf. The one thing that I do want to make a point on, whenever you do purchase a cart, whether it's a push or a pull, is the tires. Go with the ones that have the bigger tires, similar to a real small bicycle tire or what have you.
Really?
Just for the most part, the less expensive carts that have the wider plastic type tires or rubber with not a lot of air in them per se, can be a little bit more cumbersome to push or pull. The ones that have the bigger, skinnier tires tend to be a lot easier to move around the golf course.
Oh, wow. And so do you have a recommendation of product?
Bag Boy is one that I'd like to use, and then also Sun Mountain makes one called a Speed Tart, which, yes, it's the name Speed. You're going to get around the course a little bit quicker with it. There's two of the brands that we sell that I highly recommend.
And those break down pretty small, so you can pack them away in your trunk easily, correct?
Yeah, they're easy to break down, and they're very compact and very light.
And, of course, you have them at Edwin Watts Golf.
We do, yeah, and they come in a multitude of colors. So.
Okay. Great. Well, I want to ask you a couple more questions that people have been submitting. Since we do get a lot of questions for you, and I want to get to as many as possible, this one comes from Calm McCauley in Freehold, New Jersey, who says he has an old set of clubs that he wants to give to his 14-year-old son who's just taking up the game. He wants to know, can I just cut down my shafts to fit him, or should I bring the heads to be fitted to him by a professional, or should he just buy a whole new set altogether?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll say this, that he's stronger than his son. Most men are going to be stronger than a child that age or a kid that age. So if you cut the shaft down, in essence, what you have done is you have increased the stiffness of that shaft.
Mm.
So it's like if you take a long stick and try to break it, it's going to be easy. But the smaller it gets, the harder it is to break. Well, the same thing with golf clubs. So what it's going to do to him is, one, the kick point on that shaft, which helps give you lift on a golf ball. The kick point's going to be moved way down, and the shaft's going to be real stiff. So he's not going to get out of the club what he would get out of one that fit him the correct way. So you don't want to give him something or her something that is not going to fit their swing, because they're not going to see the response or the result that a normal person would with a club that fit them. And you don't want them to... You lose interest because the club's not performing right.
Sure.
So no, definitely do not do that. You know, if it's your only option, if it is your only option, then you can do it. But at the same time, just remember that the results are going to be different than a club that would fit them. And the other thing to be able to...
But, you know, I also wanted to add that for a 14-year-old boy who he's talking about here, they probably are much more limber than we are and have much more torque.
Torque, yeah, but club head speed
and
strength and impact. You know,
yeah, okay.
torque is one thing. Obviously, they're going to be able to twist a little bit more and things like that. But the thing is strength and impact, and also club head speed is going to be slower than the average adult, and they're not going to be as strong. So that's where you're going to lose a little bit there. And then as far as taking the shafts out and having them reshafted for him, that is an option. But when the clubs are made, the majority of the time there's a swing weight involved and the heads are weighted. So that's going to throw it off as well. If you put a lighter weight shaft in there, the swing weight's going to go way up. So it's going to be a little too heavy for them possibly. So I would definitely, his question said, or should I just get him a new set, a less expensive set that would fit him? That's the best alternative if you can do that. Go ahead and get them a set that fits their swing and fits their size. That way they're going to be able to enjoy the game a whole lot more than they would with something that doesn't fit them.
There you go. You got your answer. That's wonderful. Okay. Well, Calm, thank you very much. We'll be sending you a hat.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah. So now it's time to do our giveaway. We've been talking for the last few weeks about the Sonar Tech Fairway Wood. You have a choice whether you want right-handed, left-handed, stiff, medium flex, whatever. A regular flex, whatever you'd like there, and even different degrees of loft on this fairway wood, correct?
Correct.
And we, over the last 2 weeks, we've received 130 entries from all over the world once again, and people are like, are you not picking me because I live in England? No, it has nothing to do with it. I promise you, it has nothing to do with it. And actually, one listener wrote in to say, where is his note? I know I have it here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Okay, he says, tell Kenny to go low. Thank you, Ted. All right, all right, 130 entries. I sorted them by city, not by name, not by when they came in. And you can pick a number between 1 and 130. You can pick 1 or 130. And you are going to pick number?
I'm going to go with 22.
Number
fairly, that's fairly low.
Fairly low. And that will be Chris Hyder of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Good. We got some stores in Charlotte. Good for Chris.
Hey, Chris. So you can go check out that Sonar Tech Fairway Wood. Find out which one you like the best. Go into the Edwin Watts Golf Store, and then you can let Kenny know exactly what it is that you want, and we'll take care of that and send it to you. Congratulations, Chris. Charlotte, North Carolina.
He just won an awesome product. I can testify to that.
Yeah, you've been talking about this one for a while. You like that stuff. Okay, so you want to give something else away?
Yeah, sure.
What do you want to give away?
I'm going to go with the wedge. I've got a new one in here that I really like. It's definitely a game improvement type wedge. It's made by Face Ford. It's called the F2.
Wait a minute. One of the questions that we just received was, I wanted to hear Kenny's opinion about the F2 wedge, which undoubtedly you've seen infomercials on the Golf Channel about. He's heard you say in the past that us hackers should really try to use a perimeter-weighted cavity-back wedge, which these are, and most of the big-name brands aren't. So, tell us what you think, and then let's give one away.
First of all, I've never mentioned the word hackers. That's the majority of my business are guys that, you know, their handicap is higher than... I don't even want to mention that.
Hey, come on. We're all... Hackers unite. It's the bumper
exactly.
sticker that's on my car. Come on.
Exactly. I like for people to be honest. They talk about it. But anyway, the F2 wedge, what it is, it's face-forward technology. The hosel is actually set behind the face of the golf club. So when you're entering the impact zone, the face comes through and makes contact with the ball before the hosel enters the hitting area. So in essence, the grass, especially if you're in the rough, is not going to make contact with the hosel before the face does. So you're not going to, one, shank the ball, hate to use that term, and it's not going to close the club face down. So they did a big study with these wedges from 50 yards in, and they took, you know, a plethora of golfers out there at all different skill levels and said, hey, let's try this wedge versus several other wedges and see what they found. And golfers, the statistic was 34% of the shots with the F2 were inside of 10 feet compared to 14% of other wedges. Not knocking other wedges, but a lot of people can't play a traditional style or a blade style wedge that they might have compared it to, so their study might have been, you know, fixed in that way.
Can I stop you for just one second?
Yes, sure.
And I'm going to play dumb here. Can you describe the different parts of the club so that we know exactly what you're talking about?
Sure. Good question, Fred.
Do I get a hat?
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. You've got that taken care of already.
I love my hat.
You have the face of the golf club. And then when I talk about the cavity, which is the backside of the golf club, you know, some wedges have, or golf clubs have what's called a cavity back, which means that, you know, it's there's weight taken out of the back of the golf club, and it's got basically a hole, and it looks like a 360-degree ring around it. And then you have a traditional style, which is a muscle back or a solid back wedge. Then you have a piece that comes off of that that's usually anywhere from 2 to 4 inches long. That's called the hosel. That is what the shaft goes into.
Oh.
Okay, they use glue, which glues the shaft down inside the hosel, mm-hmm. which is then connected to the face. And what you find with shots, especially out of the rough, and more so with long irons than short irons, but grass will actually wrap around that hosel and close it down typically. So a lot of times you'll hit that shot short and left for the most part. So you've de-lofted it and also closed it down. So that is the hosel of the golf club. So what they have done, they have put the hosel back just a little bit behind the club. So the face appears like it's in front of the golf club for the most part. You know, it's not traditional looking. So somebody that, you know, might have a little bit of a problem, you know, adjusting to it at first, but it is a whole lot easier to use for somebody that's having a problem with a wedge.
Awesome. Although we are giving away the F2 wedge, I think Chris Coughlin can receive a hat as well because he sent in that question. But if you'd like to win the F2 wedge by face forward with an option of degrees, correct?
That is correct. It comes in 52, 56, 58, and 60 degrees.
Okay.
And we can, you know, whichever wedge they want to get, we'll take care of that.
All right. Well, send us an email to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com, and in the subject put F2 or F2 wedge, and please include your name and mailing address so that we can send you the prize when you win. For more information, check your show notes, and as always, when you enter, your email address will be provided to Edwin Watts Golf. Deadlines for entry is midnight, March 5th, Monday night, March 5th, and the winner will be announced on the program on March 6th, 2007. So it's only going to be 2 weeks till we announce the winner of the F2 Wedge. And don't forget, you get free shipping and 10% off any order that you make at Edwin Watts Golf. You can go to edwinwattsgolf.com. You can go to the golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Edwin Watts link, and that'll give you full instructions, take you right to the page with full instructions on how to get your discounts. And read those thoroughly, because I've gotten some emails from people saying that they had to negotiate their 10%. But if you put it in properly when you enter, everything should work out just fine. You can also call them at 1-800-874-0146. All right, Kenny, thanks so much, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Fred. Good talking to you.
And you too, pal. Hey, if you've been watching ESPN in the United States lately, you may have noticed a weight loss commercial for Nutrisystem for Men featuring a bunch of former NFL superstars who've lost a lot of weight on that diet. Now, if you notice at one point in the commercial, it says the diet is based on the glycemic advantage that separates the good carbs from the bad carbs. Well, if that kind of diet interests you at all, let me save you a bunch of money. That new podcast that I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the New Glucose Revolution podcast, is the same system that Nutrisystem is using, and they've based it on what Dr. Jenny Brand Miller, the author of our book, has developed. So save your money, listen to our podcasts, and buy her books. The New Glucose Revolution is now available at iTunes. Our podcast offers practical tips on using the GI to eat well, lose weight, cook for kids, and for those who need it, manage your diabetes. This week's closing quote comes from Randy Winston of Surprise, Arizona. Do you have to say it that way? Where do you live? Surprise! I crack myself up sometimes. It's the kind of quote that may not be about golf, just like this interview, but it can be applied to golf. He quotes Aldous Huxley, who says, "Experience is not what happens to you. It's what you do with what happens to you." Please send your quotes, your comments, suggestions, and your requests to Fred at golfsmarterpodcast.com.